Let's get ready to rumble. Hey, GoDaddy, the intruder is upstairs and the Federal Bureau of Incident Response. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by MSP GeekCon 2023, a conference for MSPs by MSPs. Occurring May 21st through the 23rd, 2023 in Orlando, Florida, this two-day event is built around the journey of technical growth from Tier 1 to Tier 3. Visit mspgeekcon.com for more information.
Good morning and welcome to the February 21st episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Rossini, joined as not always by my special guest co-host, Mr. Tom Lawrence. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great.
I appreciate you coming on. Tony was in the throes of Mardi Gras this weekend. I believe he's still recovering. So I appreciate you covering for him, man. How's everything with you?
Oh, things are going wonderful. We actually have some slightly warm 45-degree weather here in Detroit, so...
Nice. Well, from the 70 something here in Miami, I am not looking forward to going to Dallas weather. I leave for Ride a Boom on Tuesday morning, so not excited about that, but Ride a Boom will be fun. So for our banter topic, I forget who showed this to me. I think it was Dean, one of the MSPs. So this is called Polite Post. It takes whatever message you want, whatever email you write, and then it rewrites it into a nice, polite, safe for work email. And as the owner of an IT company, I'm sure you've never been in the position where you wanted to throttle one of your clients or maybe even one of your coworkers. I got to tell you, I set this as my home screen since I found out about it last week, and it has saved my bacon more than a few times already. Have you come across this before?
I have not used that tool before, but I right away the gear started turning going, I have an employee that we should force his chat through prior to it landing in Slack. There's interpretive layers where I think AI can provide real value.
and that's the exact, forget that like AI writing marketing copy or like writing crappy code or releasing its inner secrets like Bing and Sydney. But just the ability to convey a message in a cohesive manner that is not that will be welcomed by the other party, they could take it in. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal. I mean, it's like Grammarly with like context. I appreciate it.
And I really like these tools. I used years ago, we're talking like 15 years ago, there were some early tools that used to take a lot of long form content and summarize it. And I had a few corporate managers I worked with where I used to take that long email so I could turn it into something that could be read in a shorter period of time. And I think it's going to be a good interpretive layer for people who want bullet points. So we can take our bullet points or harsh points and turn them into soft points for the other side. And then it needs to interpret back because they're going to type something really long that I don't want to read. So give me a summary. What is it you're asking in these six paragraphs?
look at you making it all productive. My happy takeaway was I could get out all my frustration and vent on the top box, hit submit, and then they give me a nice way to communicate to others. So yes. I would love to see the MSPs play with this. Put both the before and the after. Put it in the chat. Put it in the comments of the story below or throw that over to Discord. But for now, let's get into some news. In our top business story, the Internet Supreme Court showdown is here, and the stakes couldn't be higher. Written by Izzy Lepowski for FastCompany.com. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear two cases that could change the way the Internet platforms filter and remove content. The two cases are Gonzalez versus Google and Twitter versus Temu. After terrorist attacks, the two cases were filed separately against Google, Facebook, and Twitter. The plaintiffs claim that these companies enabled the spread of ISIS propaganda online, making them complicit in aiding and abetting terrorism. In the Gonzalez case, the Supreme Court will decide whether Section 230 protects platforms from liability for what other people post and for the platform's recommendation algorithms. And to May, the court will assess whether an internet platform can be charged with aiding and abetting terrorism if a service wasn't directly used in the attack. The cases could change the way companies sort, filter, and remove content on the internet, potentially making those companies liable for the worst content on their platforms. The outcome of these cases is likely to have far-reaching consequences for the tech industry and online speech. However, it's unclear how the Supreme Court will weigh concerns about terrorism, free speech, and internet regulation when making the decision. Tom, you know, whether to filter, whether not to filter, you have a little bit of experience at this being having your forums, right? You want to have open collaboration. I'm a moderator and RMSP, same thing. We want to have open collaboration, but moderation is a major concern. This is just taking it and putting it at a national scale. What's your take on this? How do you see this?
A lot of it's going to come down to how they interpret Section 240, the sword and the shield, as they sometimes refer to it as. I often reference people to read Mike Mesnick, who runs TechDirt, has one of the best write-ups called You Don't Understand Section 240. And it's a really long read, but it's really complicated and really explains well the challenges of content moderation. And when it comes down to any platform, the only value the platform has is not the technology that drives it, but the curation of those who moderate it. The reason Reddit RMSP is valuable is because Ray and other people take the time to moderate to keep a coherent discussion in there. So there's some far-reaching, you know, could break a lot of things if we can't moderate, or if the moderation process requires some type of review. This is something we've seen Texas pass across their Supreme Court, where if you have a forum that reaches a certain number of users, they want a judicial-ish review process that they're trying to do. And this is just an extension of that to try to say who can or can't be silenced. And it's a big mess that's on both sides of the political spectrum, which unfortunately means it has support. It's the stupidest thing that they agree on. So that the consumers do not. This is not very consumer friendly at all when it comes to the end result of any of this.
And that's the challenge here also, is getting the people that are making the decisions on how this will play out, getting them to understand the underlying technologies and challenges, right? Like, good, bad, or otherwise, I'm a big fan of setting expectations so that the people of the subreddit understand what's okay and not okay. And even with that, there's far more judgment calls than I would like to admit. And it's the group of us. It's not just myself. It's several moderators together. But at the end of the day, it always comes down to judgment call, whether something's promotional, whether something is aggressive or unprofessional. I'm sure you've struggled with the same on your forums or even work talking on other people's forums. Like, do you have any good practices for determining, like, I struggle to say this because judgment, I would rather there be clear-cut policies as an engineer, right? We're all about the black and white, and just give me a checklist so we're good to go. But these things require judgment. And I can't see at a national level, at a federal level, being able to apply judgment that will filter down to the end users that will be universally applicable, right?
Exactly. I don't see any easy way out of this. There, you know, there always can be some tweaking maybe of Section 240, but the reality is it comes down to, we've run into this large scale culture collision by putting so many people on singular platforms. It's a little easier to say, here's the rules for Tom's forums, or here's the rules for Reddit RMSP. And we're always working the tune notes, and occasionally we update the rules because, well, we didn't see that coming. I thought that was off topic, but it's, you know, it's so we're always
surprised.
Yeah. Always a surprise. But by breaking them down to smaller, more manageable, focused types of forums, groups, the moderation becomes easier because we're all here for this. You have such a big collision when you say Twitter as a platform because, well, there's InfoSec Twitter. Okay, that's one section of Twitter. What about the Twitter that's less professional or that's promoting their OnlyFans pages and things like that? There's this big collision when you start putting all these. And then, of course, the elephant in the room, what about when the posts get political? Who has the right to decide what is or isn't right? Well, I don't really want my mixing of InfoSec Twitter, which is mostly why I'm there, colliding with a bunch of political things that I'm not there. And somewhere along the line, someone arguing about sports. So it's the too big problem of they are too big. You're trying to stick everyone in one big bowl of soup and it stinks. And I don't I'm not for regulation to say breaking these places up, but I think we've just reached some limits that this singular, let's put everyone in one place and then come up with policies that we then can then apply to the everyone filter are just irrational and not going to work well.
Yeah. And I definitely want to hear, I mean, we have acceptable use policies. We have what's allowed to be say, even at a company level, right? At MSP client level, what's allowed to be said on their corporate platforms or publicly. I would love to know how the MSPs are addressing this. Hit us up in the comments, hit us up on Discord, Reddit, on Tom's forums. I'll go find it over there because I'm over there too. Put it up and we definitely want to continue the conversation. But for now, let's get into the GoDaddy one.
Who's your daddy? Well, apparently some hackers. Web hosting and domain concern GoDaddy has disclosed a fresh attack on its infrastructure and concluded that one in a series of linked incidents dating back to 2020. So GoDaddy has been infiltrated several times. They've actually, if you follow, they're maybe because they're one of the earliest big popular web hosting and registrar companies, they've had so many controversies, but this feels like one more to add to the dumpster fire that I kind of feel, and I think is shared by a lot of the community, of just how GoDaddy operates. The filing details of the March 2020 attack show that it was compromised the hosting login credentials of approximately 28,000 hosting customers to their hosting accounts, as well as the login credentials of a small number of personnel, and a November 2021 breach of its hosted WordPress service. So these hackers been wandering around here for a long time, setting up redirects, and well, just having a good old time.
So hearing this, I'm trying to go back and think other example of long-term breaches, right? So I'm thinking about like the 2014 Sony attack. That I believe lasted for over a year, that they had access to the platform to them over a year. I think Marriott was very similar. If it wasn't Marriott, it was one of the hotels. Yep. Where they stayed dormant and they had access to the data for an extended period of time. You're extremely security aware and knowledgeable, more so than I am. So when it comes to response, both incident response in terms of talking to the end users, the clients, and also in how to respond when it comes to cleanup, is it different when it's been, when they've been laying dormant or had access for so long, like one of these versus you just found out you got ransomware yesterday?
Not really. I think we're going to get the same sentiment, and we've all heard it before. And matter of fact, I had ChatGPT write a great one. This is something I found to be really good at. I said, write me a generic breach notification note would be in the news. And I also said, write it in the style of the register. And it did. And it said, where you can care about your data. We promise this won't happen again. It had every point in there. And it's just boilerplate at this point where if you've been in there 2 years, a year, got in yesterday, whatever, we're going to slap the same thing on there. Now, what does this really mean? Well, if they were wandering around that long, when was the last time there's an audit? How did these people have such persistent access mechanisms on there? No one changed your password for 3 years? No one noticed this employee? Was it a employee who left and their credentials still worked? We don't have enough detail to really dive into it, but this was obviously not a spy mission where we had a leaky database at a Marriott. This was more about, hey, look at all these redirects we can put in for fun and profit. And how did that not get noticed for how long? That's the part that blows my mind. That's the
part that kills me, because they have to have a million more compliances than someone like myself or yourself. And we go through our regular audits. Yes, the platform being immensely bigger, with orders of magnitude bigger. That's not the question, but they also have staff for this. And part of that is accounting for doing regular audits. I could see 2 months, I could see 6 months. Even 6 months is not crazy when it comes to, some of these malicious actors that sit and stay dormant. 3 years is kind of nuts. Absolutely bonkers to me. Now, I'm trying to say how I say this nicely. GoDaddy's not one of my preferred vendors when I recommend to others.
I don't think anyone prefers GoDaddy. We are thrust upon them when we take over clients. It's the only time, and until we migrate them off of, I think that's the only way we actually engage with GoDaddy. First choice. It's never where I go to register things. The
perennial question of how do you defederate Office 365 from GoDaddy? How many times a week do we see that question?
Exactly.
And yeah, no, I get it. But the thing that drives me nuts about all this, yes, we and Tony and I have had this conversation a million times of, do we keep covering these security stories? Because it feels like it's the same thing over and over and over again. But the reason we keep doing it, besides the MSPs having asked us to, is the awareness factor. Do you think the people that are signing up for GoDaddy realize they've had 3 years of a breach? Do you think the average GoDaddy user is going to see this story and realize maybe I should pick a different vendor because of this?
I think so. And I think there's still, as we know from the forums, there's always another MSP starting every day. So this is news to them. They don't know the war stories. But the good news is, if we post this in our MSP, the drama of people going there, everyone wants to tell their battle story of dealing with code.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I think people will get the impression pretty quickly. And this is just more dogpiling. I actually encourage people to head over to Wikipedia and look at the history of controversies with GoDaddy. And they're like 20 years. I forgot about their whole boycott over them supporting SOPA. Like, talk about a company that's just had a history of terrible things. Well, not just their service.
And that's the case that kills me, right? Comcast has a history of a horrible history of bad decisions. Mm-hmm. You have trying to think, Uber is another company. Constant cover-ups and horrible decisions, like the most worst decisions of humanity has been made by the executives at Uber, starting with potentially stealing code from Google, right? Just their nascency just was already mired in all this controversy. And it still drives me nuts that it doesn't matter, because if you have enough marketing budget, clients will sign up. Or if you buy the computer and it comes with three months of 365, if you sign for a GoDaddy account and register a new domain and you're locked in at $99 a month or whatever it is. I'm making all these numbers up, by the way, before I get yelled at. But it drives me nuts. But you know what I'd love to see from the MSPs? Give me a good reason to use GoDaddy. Tell me I'm wrong. Give me a good reason to use GoDaddy so Tom and I can laugh and maybe learn something. I doubt it, but maybe learn something.
Now I have a new question for ChatGPT to explain to me why I should use GoDaddy.
There you go. And while Tom's doing that, we can move on to the next story. In our third top story in security realm, FBI is investigating a cybersecurity incident on its own network, written by Sergio Gatlan for Bleeping Computer. The FBI is investigating a cybersecurity incident that occurred on its network, which the agency claims have been contained. The FBI has not provided further details about the incident. However, CNN reported that it involved a hack on a computer system used to investigate child sexual exploitation in the FBI's New York field office. In November 2021, the FBI's email servers were also hacked to send spam emails impersonating FBI warnings. According to the spam tracking nonprofit Spam House, the breach potentially reached a much larger number of mailboxes than the estimated 100,000. The agency is currently working to uncover the scope and overall impact of the recent incident. Tom, we say it over and over again, and we've heard it 1,000 times over. It's not if you will be breached, it's when you will be breached. Does it surprise you that the FBI had an incident?
No, it's just a matter of time. And in some ways they've had incidents. If you're a fan of Darknet Diaries and you follow the Golem Fun episode, where the person used the FBI's computers to carry out other hacks, which was one of the funniest things ever, but especially in the context by which he was being observed by the FBI while doing it. So that was, it's going to happen at some point. Now, my understanding, and I don't have any intimate knowledge of specifically the FBI, but I do have friends that work at places like Homeland Security, and they do a reasonably good job, I feel. I've never been hands-on, but just talking to the IT infrastructure people, of air-gapping some of the really critical things where they have more than one computer in my friend's office because he can only look things up over here and email about them over here, because email being one of the big breaches. And it's kind of an interesting what maybe the future looks something like for any company that cares highly about security is, hey, look at how compartmentalized they've done this. Because as you know, having worked with law enforcement, the chain of custody when it comes to evidence, and if any suspicion that chain of custody, the defense has a heyday with it. So if any cases are in process and someone says, well, your computer had someone in there, what, how do I know they didn't change my client's evidence, Your Honor? You know, I want this case dismissed. And that is something that has occurred in smaller law enforcement where there has been breaches and it was a factor for them to, you know, kind of get away with going, hey, you know, you, we can't really trust the things you have here on this evidence, especially because they're investigating the worst of the worst crimes of child porn. It's going to be all electronic evidence and or a majority. So you have this big, I understand why that's a target and understanding the systems that it was related to. So it's scary.
So taking it to back to our level, right? Because the federal government, especially a law enforcement agency, having air gap systems, or not air gap in traditional sense, but at least separate systems for communication versus internal searching, that makes sense. At a more commonplace level, like the average MSP client, unless they're critical infrastructure or something, I can't think of any of my clients in the past that would ever gone for such a thing. I would have loved to sell twice as many computers, but I never would have gone for that. But, you know, but taking it down to a more reasonable level, a more practical level, there's been operating systems. Google has done this in the past. There's been phones in the past where that had separate storage areas for personal versus business to keep the quote unquote church and state separate. I do wonder, because that is completely in the realm of possibility, right? That, so having storage areas, and I know it's not ideal. Ideally, you want separate devices but and separate networks. But I wonder if we can expect that coming to a more personal level where you can have the storage of ultra-sensitive information in one area of a device and it's completely separate, quote-unquote air-gapped, within the same device from the rest of the operating system. And that seems to me more reasonable at an everyday level.
Yeah, I think that's, it's similar to even what I do with my computer. I have my work stuff, but I have a really fast, fun workstation. I can't just do work stuff on it. Yes, I can focus that way. I have two drives in there, and I actually change which drive boots, and each one has a separate encryption password. So they're never to the shell meet. You know, because they're always two separate things with two separate passwords. So you can't infect one over to the other because it locks the other one out at the BIOS level. I do that just to protect myself from something stupid I might do.
As a friend, I never wish you ill will, but I would love to see the guy that takes your desktop and tries to figure out when he's going to try to break the encryption on one drive and then realize it's completely different on another drive.
Yep.
Oh, that's got to be like infuriating. That's awesome. You know what? MSPs, tell us how you're adopting this, if you are, because we have plenty of MSPs that are working in highly secure areas. But tell me, separate from air-gapped, are you doing anything at a more universally applicable layer level with your clients? Let us know what's going on. Very curious. But for now, let's get into some notables.
Twitter has announced it will begin to charge users for SMS two-factor authentication. Starting on March 20th, users who want to keep using SMS two-factor will have to pay for the service or switch to a more reliable authenticator app or a physical security key. Twitter is justifying the charge by saying SMS two-factor authentication is vulnerable to SIM swap hacks, and they're not wrong, because that could definitely compromise a user's account. In addition, according to sources, Twitter may be looking to cut costs as it has been phasing out SMS even before Elon took over. Get rid of SMS wherever you can, use a key or use a 2FA app. Mark Zuckerberg not wanting to be left out of the fun of charging for verifying your identity means Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, is testing that new feature called Meta Verified. For a fee of $11.99 a month, web users, and $14.99 a month for mobile users, the feature will allow users to verify their accounts by submitting a government ID. In return, users receive a blue badge, extra impersonation protection, and access to direct customer support. The service will initially be rolled out in Australia and New Zealand, with other countries to follow. This move comes as Meta experiments new business strategies, including the introduction of a paid verification subscription to boost revenue as its advertising growth slows.
In my first notable mention, Microsoft Outlook flooded with spam due to broken email filters, written by Sergio Gatlan for Bleeping Computer. According to numerous reports, Microsoft Outlook users have been flooded with spam emails due to broken email filters. Users have complained that even messages previously tagged as spam now land in their inboxes. The problem has been ongoing for months, but reports suggest it has been particularly bad over the last 9 hours. Despite customer complaints, Microsoft's Office service status page claims everything is up and running. And as of reporting, the company has not commented. In my second notable mention, Windows 11 will let you end tasks directly from the taskbar. Also written by Sergio Gatlan for Bleeping Computer. Microsoft is adding a new end task option to the Windows 11 taskbar that will allow users to quickly end an unresponsive process by right-clicking an app's taskbar icon. The new feature is currently being developed as a hidden feature of Windows 11 build 25300 in the Windows Insider Developer Channel. While this new option may be beneficial for power users, it could also cause issues for those who accidentally click and end up closing their apps without saving. Users can enable the end task option on the jump list of app icons in the Windows 11 taskbar by running a command using the VIVE or Vive tool developed by Windows enthusiast Albacore. In our resource of the week, GitHub Copilot update includes security vulnerability filtering, written by Paul Krill for InfoWorld.com. GitHub Copilot, the AI-assisted coding tool, has been updated to provide better security and improve code quality. The update includes an enhanced AI model, faster suggestion delivery, and a new feature to block insecure coding patterns in real time. Copilot is now available for all businesses and includes VPN proxy support.
There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. February 20th through the 24th, an in-person event, IT Nation Evolve in Phoenix, Arizona. The 22nd through the 24th, another in-person event, Ride a Boom in Dallas, Texas. And again, the 22nd through the 23rd, an in-person event, ASCII MSP Success Summit in Newport Beach, California. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, in case you missed it, catch the latest episode of 38 at 38 featuring Kyle Jackson of ConnectWise. On March 2nd at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Paco LeBron and Rick Smith of MSP Unplugged join the Tech Bar for episode 53. And as always, MSP Dispatch is here for you every Tuesday and Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm a jobaholic. We all have something in common. We all have a worst job story. Each episode, I'll welcome one guest to share their most insane worst job story. And in return, I'll share one of mine. Join me the first Friday of every month for new episodes of 38 at 38.
So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't, go ahead and hit it three times. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on the YouTubes or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can propose your own stories and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode or leave us a voicemail 833-MSP-Network. Tom, it's a pleasure as always, man. I appreciate you coming on, giving us all the excellent news and your wonderful take on everything. Thanks so much, dude.
Hey, appreciate it. I love being here.
What do you got coming up next? You're always doing something fun.
Oh, you know, I have a few cybersecurity videos. One's going to be kind of spicy, as I think you've seen the discussion on that already in the couple chat rooms. Oh, there's more spicy. I'll share with you offline until I can get the full online. I'm waiting for people to respond because I never call anyone out without them fully being able to respond. And so far, the responses have been kind of quiet.
That's when you know it's good. I think that's an excellent teaser to go check out Lawrence Technology Systems. His YouTube links will be on the show notes below and also his Business Technicality podcast. Both links will be there in the show notes. Tom, thank you so much. And to the MSP audience, take care of yourselves and each other.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
I'm Maria Zolt. That's what I get for trying to figure out the next line.
Who's your daddy? Well, apparently some hackers. Web hosting domain. Sorry. I lost a little composure real quick.
In my third top story, The FBI is investigating a cybersecurity incident on its network, written by Sergio Gatlan for Bleeping Computer. The FBI is investigating a cybersecurity incident that occurred on its own network with the... Dry lips today.
Twitter's announced the...
The problem has been ongoing for months, but reports suggest it has been... In the resource of the week, GitHub Copilot update includes security vulnerability filtering, written by Phil Krill for InfoWars. Ooh, I screwed that up. Sorry, Paul. All right. In our resource of the week, GitHub Copilot update includes security vulnerability filtering, written by Paul Krill In our resource of the week, GitHub Copilot update includes security vulnerability filtering, written by Paul Krill InfoWorld. Jesus. In our resource of the week, GitHub Copilot update includes security vulnerability filtering, written by Paul Krill InfoWorld. The sentence is going to kill me. So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't, go ahead and hit it three times. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and... Struggling today. It's like my liver knows what's happening next week or in 24 hours.
So hey, this is Tony Francisco reporting live for the MSP Dispatch. But it's a little bit not live. I just want to say to the crowd out there, I love you guys. Okay, it's a little crazy. I gotta sit down here. We're having a drink. I'm gonna put my mask back on. MSP Dispatch, watch it. Keep up to date with the news in the industry. And have a drink. Happy Mardi Gras.